Here I'm using a standard header for my page, and then the subject line is territorial expansion of the United States. And then the body of the essay goes, as most people are familiar with, the United States formed from an original 13 British colonies in North America. At that time, there was also a large piece of land called the Northwestern Territory. Hence, the history of the United States and the territorial expansion of the United States is not only a history of states, but also of territories. So there are many historical overviews of the development of the Western territorial expansion on the internet and, of course, in books in the library. However, for the purposes of the present report, we need to look at some elements of this in more detail. First, we'll have the following chart, which has 11 treaties to which the United States is a party, and which involve the transfer of territory between one government and another. So among these 11, we've included the San Francisco Peace Treaty, which was the treaty which culminated World War II in the Pacific, and which involved Taiwan. We've included that for reference, even though some would claim that that treaty doesn't involve any cession of territory by or to the United States. However, you may want to reserve your judgment on this point for a little later. So when we look at all these treaties, for example, let's look at the Louisiana Purchase Treaty of 1803. Okay, we notice something very important is that the treaty has a specific date when it comes into force. And this is true for all of these treaties. Now, these dates can be obtained from the Department of State's publication, Treaties in Force, which is published annually. So, it's important when looking at these to recognize not only is this the date the treaty came into force, but this is the date when the cession of territory was effectuated. In other words, when the cession of territory, any cession of territory stipulated in the treaty actually became effective. So this is, and by looking at these 10 or more treaties, our point is, this is the way that a cession of territory in a treaty has always been interpreted. It's always been interpreted this way. That is, to come into force at the same time the treaty comes into force. Now, you know, this is very important. For example, before the date when, you know, the Spanish-American war sessions, before those were ceded to the United States, according to the coming to force of the treaty, they belonged to Spain. And various legal issues which might come up in that era, there are ramifications of the fact that, you know, Spanish sovereignty ended at this point and U.S. sovereignty began at that point. And these points in relation to any particular legal case which may have occurred are, of course, the subject of vigorous debate by international lawyers. Because, of course, the Spanish, for example, they have one set of laws and the United States has another set. They're not always the same when dealing with various items like, you know, whatever. Okay, so a treaty has always been interpreted this way. Now, let's look at the situation, interesting situation presented by Cuba. Cuba was territory conquered by the United States during the Spanish-American War, as were Guam, Philippines, and Puerto Rico. But in the peace treaty, Spain renounced its, or gave up its sovereignty over Cuba, but no receiving country was stipulated. Now, you know, it's very interesting to look at this from the point of view of what flag was flying over Cuba at this time. Well, after the conquest of Cuba, after the surrender ceremonies in Cuba on July 17th, 1898, the U.S. flag was raised because a common custom when dealing with these territories which are conquered and therefore come under, you know, the jurisdiction of the conqueror, the army, which has come in and taken over, they raise their own flag. This is commonly seen. And yet, at the same time, it has to be noted that with the coming into force of the treaty, Cuba has not been ceded to the United States. It is foreign territory. Even though the U.S. flag is flying. So here we're also introduced to a very interesting situation where we have a category of territory which most civilians are totally unaware of the existence of, and that is foreign territory under the jurisdiction of the United States. And again, that's important because the words "under the jurisdiction of" are also very important when we talk about certain obligations which United States officials may have to the territory in question during this time period. Of course, as most people who've studied Cuban history are aware, Cuba became independent on May 20th, 1902. So after that time, of course, the military jurisdiction of the United States came to an end, as was announced by, as was formally announced by President McKinley at the time. Let's look at the situation of the Mexican-American War, okay? Here we see that there was a Mexican-American peace treaty which came into force, blah, 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 such and such a date. Now, what obviously the United States officials and the Mexican officials negotiated for the drafting of this Mexican-American peace treaty. And what they decided to do was to redraw the boundary line between the United States and Mexico. So here's a diagram of the United States before the culmination of the Mexican-American War, and then after the culmination of the Mexican-American War, but before the further addition of the Gadsden Purchase. That was another separate arrangement. So you can see is what they've done here. They redrew the southern boundary line of the United States. Now, there are also some important things to look at here. I mean, on the one hand, the Mexicans haven't been defeated in the war. You know, they were not really in a very strong position to argue about where the boundary line should be drawn. According to historical records, which comment on the feeling of the American officials at the time, they seem to be looking for an area which we would classify as sort of the what's today be considered the southwest area of the United States. They were looking to draw the line through an area which was pretty sparsely populated. Certainly they admitted they could have drawn the line further south, another 10 miles, 20 miles. But it seemed they were getting into more populated areas, and they wanted to avoid the possible, disorientation, which might cause the local people not knowing whether they should stay or whether they should be classified on the southern border of the line or the northern border. And, of course, as we know, back in the late 1840s, there was no wall. Of course, people were free to wander back and forth. So this was part of their thinking back then. Now, during the Mexican-American War, if you read the treaty, during the period of the Mexican-American War, it's important to note how far south the United States military troops actually reached. And most people today who haven't done an in-depth study of the Mexican-American War are somewhat surprised to learn that the United States actually occupied Mexico City. Mexico City was under U.S. military occupation, which means United States military government was in force in Mexico City. And looking on our maps again, you'll see that is far, far south of where they decided to draw the new boundary line. Nevertheless, it's important to notice, at the same time, it's important to notice that Mexico City itself is not mentioned in the peace treaty. In other words, there are no specifications that, Mexico City is not ceded to the United States. There's nothing, there's no negative. I mean, that's a very significant city in the geography of Mexico. But notice these negatives, like what is not ceded to whom? These are not stipulated. The fact is, they draw the new border line there, and so that amounts to the territory, the Mexican, original Mexican territory north of that border line is being ceded to the United States. But there's no stipulation about other things, other cities. And again, as we know, a famous example of a occupied U.S. city during the Mexican-American War is the East Coast port city of Tampico. T-A-M-P-I-C-O. And this is also not mentioned in the treaty. So what's the interpretation of this? The customary interpretation is if it's not specifically given to, you know, another country, it returns to the ownership of its original sovereign. That's the interpretation through all these treaties, especially the ones involving war. So we don't make the advancement that, oh, we don't make the no one tries to argue that because Tampico is not mentioned in the treaty and U.S. troops are there, they're already there, so therefore, since nothing is mentioned about it in the treaty, so therefore Tampico belongs to the United States. Or Mexico City is not mentioned in the treaty, so therefore, since U.S. troops are already there, so Mexico City already belongs, or at that point, does actually belong to the United States. See, that isn't the way the treaty is interpreted. And again, this is an important point to note. For most of these treaties, it's also generally stated, the treaty, you know, comes into force on such and such a date. And again, the United States the United States officials do not advance the argument that, again, going back to our previous example of Mexico City, well, or let's just say there's a dispute over actually a piece of land. For example, many people read the Mexican-American Treaty and then they say, well, California, essentially, California was ceded to the United States. However, that's back in those days, or for people more familiar with Mexican geography, that kind of statement is rather confusing, because if you look more carefully at the map, you'll see there's something called Upper California and Lower California in terms of the geographic designation. So, what the United States has received as a result of the Mexican-American Peace Treaty is actually what was referred to in those times as Upper California. Now, if there were an argument about this and people said, well, okay, Lower California, also someone claims, well, Lower California also belongs to the United States. And they'd say, well, why is that? And they'd say, well, it's not mentioned in the treaty. However, see, the United States military troops had already occupied Lower California early on in the Mexican-American War campaign, and they already made an announcement that said we hereby seize Lower California for the United States. So you see, since Lower California had already been ceded to the United States as a result of this announcement, so therefore it's not mentioned in the treaty, but in fact it belongs to the United States. But see, again, you come back, the treaty is not interpreted this way. And you'll see in other, if you carefully examine many of these treaties, you'll see that even particular pieces of land which were already, you know, say already under the complete control of another country's military. And then it was decided, yes, it was decided to cede a certain portion of that territory to the other country. Even though they're already there, it's specifically stated in the treaty what's being ceded, and then if it's not being ceded, it's considered to be have to be returned to the original sovereign. So this comes down to a question of how these treaties are interpreted. And when there's a dispute on this, we can talk about something called the customary law of treaties, which even was in existence before the Vienna Convention on the customary law of treaties. It was even in place before that, just customary rules and precedent which were followed in interpreting these treaties. So custom, the way things have been previously done in dealing with these issues, especially the subject of territorial cession, this is a very much reference in interpreting a later treaty. And, you know, quite frankly speaking, when we come to this subject of Taiwan's international legal status, this point seems to be consistently forgotten or consistently ignored by all these so-called experts in various think tanks and various universities, and who author articles and books on Taiwan's situation. And so these are some of the important issues we need to look at. So turning to the San Francisco peace treaty, we first want to consider in a little bit of detail when, according to the laws, precedent, customary usages, etc., which U.S. officials are obligated to observe, when did Taiwan's territorial sovereignty actually become transferred to China? And that will be the subject of our next chapter.